Hello guys, welcome to another episode of Cuentos with Hannah, and today we have an amazing guest, Erwan. Hello,
what's
welcome
up
to the podcast.
Hi everyone, my name's Erwan. So I run a production company called the Fat Kid Inside Studios, and we have a publishing platform called Feature Online.
Not Feeder.
Feature, yeah. So it's like a lot of people thought it was Feeder, and then, but it's like a play on words, so I didn't really want to correct anyone. So it's really up to anyone what they want to call it.
And just to state the obvious, guys, y'all know I go above and beyond with my visuals, but right now my camera is not being nice to me, so we're gonna have to settle for my computer's camera. But that's all right, because we're here for the content. Yes,
exactly.
I'm actually going to share with you a question that we got from a viewer, because that's the way that we do it here on the podcast. And I'll do a little bit of an insight on why I chose this question, but let's listen to it first.
Hi, Hannah. I'm Steffi from the Philippines. Today, can we make cuenta about the real struggle of reaching your goals? You make it seem easy to do anything, and I've been watching your vlog since then, and I even started mine. But it seems like there's nothing right going on about what I'm doing, even though I feel happy doing it. I wish you would go in depth about this. Since you're one of my inspirations, it would be so great if you could help me achieve it in a little way. I was greatly inspired by the way you talked during the time I attended your event in SM Aura, and I wanted to hear more specifically about this topic. Thank you.
Little bit of a backstory. When I graduated from high school, and I'm not sure how old Steffi is, but maybe she isn't around that time. When I graduated from high school, I was very frustrated because I was looking for a mold to fill in the world, right? Like somebody that I could look up to, somebody that I can follow suit of, and I could not find that at all. And while I was creating my outline and doing a little bit of research about you, but not too much because I want to hear things from you as well, I realized that you were a trailblazer or a seasoned veteran for a lot of the industries that I personally want to explore. And, you know, that's film, travel, fitness, and food. And so you're definitely somebody that has already achieved or is continuing to achieve the goals that I personally have for myself. And so in a one statement, the question she asked me, I am asking you. And you do all of these things, not just bare minimum, but with excellence, right? So yeah, that's why I wanted to talk about achieving goals today.
Steffi's question is a great starting point, but not so much. I mean, the content of the question is great, but for me, it's a reflection of where people from younger generations are coming from in terms of what an achievement is for them and what they define as success.
Yes.
Which I think is so important. And I probably think about this more now that I'm a father and I kind of have a daughter, and
You kind of have a daughter.
Yeah, I kind of have a daughter. But I see how I can influence her, you know, how her personality and how she sees the world and all that. And I think it's something that has to do with this young generation where there's people feel like they need to be successful in everything that they do right away.
Yeah.
And if I had that mentality right from the bat after school or after college, I wouldn't have been able to achieve anything, because you set this expectation of success so high.
Yes.
That you're too scared to take that first step. Because that first
exactly.
step seems so huge, right?
It's
and you're like,
so big. It's like a leap.
It's a leap. And I'm like, I'm going to, 100% I'm going to fail in this. So why even take that step? Why jump off the building?
Exactly.
Right? My background and how I started, it wasn't about expectations. It was about, let's figure out what I'm good at. I'm going to throw myself 100% in absolutely every freaking direction. I'm going to make so many mistakes. It's going to be disgusting. And I'm going to do the stupidest things that I want to do, but I will be self-sufficient doing it. So every mistake that I make is my own it's my own responsibility. And that was my whole mentality after college. Like, I remember coming out of university in Paris, and all my friends, I took up business basically in Paris, and all my friends were looking for steady, comfortable jobs in the things that we learned in school, which is 100% fine.
Yes.
But then I said, I'm in my 20s. Like, why do I want to do something that I feel like I should be doing in my 40s, right? So what can I do to challenge the hell out of me? And I started looking for jobs in Africa, in different countries in Africa, in different countries in South America. And eventually I got a call back from a company in Far Eastern Russia. And I was like, I saw the name of the email, operations manager, a subject in the email, operations manager in Sakhalin, Russia. When I read that subject, in my head, I said, this is the job I'm going to take. And do you know why?
Wow.
It was because I didn't know where Sakhalin was. I had no idea where Sakhalin was, and okay. It was Russia, and it was never in my radar, because I didn't even apply to Russia.
Wow.
It's just my email found its way to Far Eastern Russia, and then the company contacted me and said, hey, we need someone to start in the summer. It's a two-year guaranteed position. You're going to be handling 40 Russian people, taking care of all our Eastern operations. Are you down? And I looked at it. Literally took me 15 minutes. I went on Google Maps. I Googled the town. Nothing came up except for, like, them bombing a Korean airplane in the 80s. I saw it geographically located in the north of Japan and North Korea. And I'm like, this place looks absolutely crazy and scary. And this is what I need to do.
Oh, my gosh.
So
and
I did that.
That's one out of a million stories where you don't actually get into a bad situation or scammed.
No, but it was the toughest 2 years of my life. I got beaten up in the street. People in that area of Russia aren't very friendly to foreigners.
Wow.
There's racial slurs. No one in the company spoke English. So I really had to try to learn Russian and deal with Russian personalities that are very difficult personalities.
Wow.
And I stuck it out for 2 years, because that was when I talked to the guy in the interview. He said, hey, you need to give me 2 years. And in my head, I was like, you know what? I can either complain and quit, or I can give you 2 years.
Oh my gosh.
And that's because I knew that 2 years is nothing. It's absolutely nothing.
In the grand scheme of things.
Exactly. And that's why my mentality was always about putting in the time and putting in the work. My dad and my mom both came from very modest families, very big families that didn't have much growing up. And my dad started becoming really successful in his 40s and his 50s.
Mm-hmm.
And so who am I, and who's everyone today in their 20s
to think,
demanding
right?
to be successful? And I'm sure you can talk to a lot of people and they have that same story about their parents. So they're your best teachers. Look at your parents. When were they successful? When were their grandparents successful?
Yeah.
You know, some people stayed 20 years in a job.
Yeah.
So once I learned that, then I really, from then on, it was all about, what am I passionate about? What do I love doing? Just do it. And then if eventually you can figure out if you can make that into something, make that into a career, why not? But what was really important is I never once let go of the responsibility of being self-sufficient, like I said in the beginning. So while I was doing all this, while I was pursuing my passions, I was working a 9-to-5 job. You know, I was working corporate, because that teaches you so much. It teaches you responsibility, time management, structure, all
exactly.
very boring things.
But important.
That have helped me so much in developing this career that I now have, that 10 years ago didn't even have a label. Like, we started creating content.
Okay, wait, listen, this is what I had to say, okay? And that's exactly, like, right, the point that I was going to say is usually some people, you know, come out of the womb and they're like, I want to be this when I grow up. But I feel like I was going to ask you, what did you say you wanted to be when you grew up? Because you practically made the career that you have right now. That was... You know, those careers that you are doing right now, that you're pursuing right now, were not even concepts back then. You know, so like, what was that for you? It was not like necessarily you were going for a goal, but you created the goal as you went by, as long as you had that mindset. Like it's completely backwards.
Because you know, a lot of times when you do something and you're so focused at doing it, you very, very rarely realize what you're doing.
Yes.
You know, you're kind of, you get lost in it.
Yeah.
And if you tell me now that I've been creating content now for over 12 years. I have no idea where those 12 years went, and I can't recap. I can't recap how we went from there to here. It's impossible because it just all happened. But what I can tell you is that the thing I always repeat to people all the time, I never pursued this as a career. And I think that was what helped me become successful in it, is because I didn't expect anything from it.
Yes.
I've been doing it for 12 years. I only have been doing it as a full-time job for maybe 6 years. So imagine, it took me 6 years of doing something really passionately to decide, hey, there's a business opportunity here.
Exactly.
And I think that's so key, because I think a lot of people, and there's a lot of data coming out of colleges and high schools now, a lot of people come out and they say, hey, I want to be a content creator, right? And each time someone tells me that, I'm just like, hey, maybe it's possible. I'm sure there's probably a lot of really successful content creators who came out of school saying they want to be content creators.
Yes.
But I can vouch that it's probably not the majority. A lot of people just probably naturally fell into it, right?
Exactly. And that's actually what happened to me. And I think oh my gosh, I had a really good question and it flew away. Come back.
It'll come back. It'll circle back.
Come back. Anyway, but yeah, like that idea that people think that it's like, number one, people don't know what it entails to be a content creator. You know, you only see what you see, but it's really not the full story. But at the same time, like for you, for example, I wonder, what term do you like using? Because before, if someone would say, what do you do? I'm a YouTuber. That's not necessarily a job opportunity. That's not a job position. That's not a role. But nowadays, it's becoming a job position, or, you know, some people don't like to be called content creators or influencers, or, you know, like, what do you like to be called, I guess?
I think there's a need for labels, but it's also just frustrating that people need labels. Influencer, so I've always seen that more as an adjective.
Yes.
Because usually an influencer, I mean, obviously there's some people who... usually an influencer has a certain set of skills that they're first and foremost selling. Is it photography? Is it videography? Is it art? It's something. You're doing something.
You're influencing something. Yeah.
Correct. You're influential in a certain sphere or a certain art or a certain format. Mm-hmm. So I've always seen that more as an adjective. In terms of content creator, if you really look at what the word means, absolutely every single brand and company has been creating content, if they've been creating advertising or if they've been trying to find how to convey and express their brand experience to an audience, to people, to their consumers. So content creation has been happening for a long, long time.
Yes.
And I think I mentioned this to you before, when we were on the set of Yes in a Box. A radio DJ once said something like, oh, you know, you just create content on the internet. And then I get very snappy,
offended, of course.
I was just really snappy, and I said, the difference between me and you is that I work for myself and you work for someone else, but at the end of the day, we're both creating content. You're just doing it in audio and I'm just doing it in video. So I think when people ask me nowadays, I'm very comfortable saying content creator.
Yes.
I wouldn't say YouTuber, because that would mean you're attached to that platform only.
That's very true, yes.
So you could say I create content for YouTube, for Facebook, whatever, and people understand that. But then, like, it's funny, when I'm filling out forms for, like, passport, you know when they ask you occupation?
Yes.
I usually have, this is funny, I've never actually said this to anyone, but when I fill out, like, that passport immigration form, it's so funny, I never put the same thing. Like, do you write content creator? It's so strange. And it's so, for the longest time, because I used to run restaurants and I had restaurant, and I still have a couple restaurants and bars, I would write entrepreneur because it seems like the widest thing. But then anytime I've met anyone who tells me they're an entrepreneur, in my head is either they sell drugs or or they have no idea what they do for work. You know what I mean? Because it's so
broad.
It's so vague, yeah. Mm-hmm. So at the end of the day, I just tell people, like, when I'm in that formal setting and people really need to understand what I do, I say I run a media company, basically.
Yes, amazing. See, that I love that. Like, and I feel like, you know what, I just got an idea now. Like, for those forms, do they genuinely care what you do? I don't know. But now, every time I have those forms, I just put student because it gets me out of it, like, pretty easily. But when I'm not a student anymore, I'm going to, like, put the job opportunities I want to have. So I'm going to put, like, director, like, producer. Like,
just something. Put it out there to the universe.
Exactly. I think that's manifesting it.
That's a great documentary idea, by the way. Like, where do those forms go? I would love to do a video on that.
Genuinely, where do those forms go? Because, like, why do you need all of this information, right? Actually, the question that I was going to ask came back. So you said that, you know, your passion kind of just became your career. And personally, that happened to me as well. But the struggle that I have with that, which is kind of what I'm trying to work towards, is I'm trying to have a job that I'm able to have in order to fund my passion. Because when the line between the two, like work and I guess passion, is blurred, it tends to kind of spoil my love for the art or my love for creating. So, like, have you ever felt that? Like, oh, this, you know, once was something I was passionate about and now it's just something I have to get done?
I think I realized that very early on. So maybe backtracking a little bit, I knew it was very important in the beginning, especially if I was going to earn from doing content online. Yeah. There are two main revenue ways. There are two main revenue streams.
Yeah.
One would be direct platform earning through AdSense and YouTube and Facebook, which in the Philippines is quite low. Because the ad, it's not because it's a Filipino audience, but it's only because Filipino companies pay less to be on YouTube and Facebook versus American companies.
Got it.
And so these two, all the companies that want to advertise on these online platforms go through a bidding process. So basically Verizon, let's say in the US, says, I want to pay $3 per 1,000 views, but everyone has to live in Wyoming in the US. And so basically your videos wouldn't get that ad money. So you'd get only the ad money that Filipino companies bid for.
Got it.
Which makes the CPM much lower. So I knew that because of that, and because I wanted to build a company and not be alone in this, I knew I had to focus on direct brand advertising and integration and content. You're coming in at a time when this has already been settled.
Yeah.
No one cares if you're doing branded content. It's cool. You need to earn. You need to eat, right?
Which is great. That's so great.
Exactly. Us, when we first started, because we were doing it as a passion, once we started doing brand content, we were sellouts.
Yes.
100%. It's like, yes. Why am I watching an ad? Why am I watching this and this and that? And that really bothered me, even though the amount of negative comments you get online versus positive comments is like 1% versus 99%.
Exactly.
But for some reason, that 1% is just the most painful.
Oh, yeah. It hits somewhere there.
Exactly. And you can listen to all the podcasts in the world that tell you to be happy and ignore the negative. But at the end of the day, we are human and we will focus on the negative.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. And so I think go ahead.
So I've always thought of what can I learn from that? And so I said, okay, early on, if I want to do branded content, I need to do either really cool stuff for the brands that other people would really enjoy watching.
Yes.
Or build so much value that the consumers wouldn't care if it's branded or not.
Yes.
And then they'll sit through it. And now you'll see a lot of comments online saying, oh, I didn't skip any ads.
Mm-hmm.
And it's funny and it's a recurring comment, but it also it shows the change of how people see it now. They see it like, oh, I want to be here to support you because I love what you're doing.
Yes.
So I think we're at a point now where you can create something you're highly passionate about as long as you're lucky enough to work for a brand that understands the true spirit of what collaboration is.
Yes.
And it's saying, hey, here's the funding. Here are brand values that we want you to talk about. The rest is up to you. And
yes.
I've had the opportunity to work with some brands like that, and it's been the most amazing thing, and it doesn't kill the passion. But I've also had the flip side of that, and that's always a little more difficult. It even, regardless of the pay, I've had some contracts where I'm like, this isn't worth it. This stress, creative stress is not worth it, because it's not only affecting this project, but it's affecting all my other projects.
Yes. Because people can tell if you're faking it. Like, I for one, am somebody that, even if I try, it'll be very difficult for me to show that I'm trying, that I'm genuine, even if I'm not. And, like, I completely agree with you. You know, at first, when we were starting out, when YouTube was becoming a business, because it wasn't before, you know, but when it was becoming, or let's say content creation, and that industry was becoming a business in the Philippines, people would brand you a sellout. So they're like, oh, hassle an ad again or whatever. And I'm just like, you know, at first I was like, oh, that's true. Like, I don't want my, you know, my listeners or my subscribers to feel like I'm trying to steal money from them or I'm trying to earn from them, you know. But after a while, as you said, once you work with more brands, which I have gotten the opportunity to explore working with more brands, you are able to see that, like, wow, there does not have to be a trade-off of passion when you are earning. And, like, my favorite brands are those that are, like, well, like, just to be technical, like, brands ask you, like, for, sometimes they'd ask you to approve the content first before it goes out. But I've worked with brands that are like, no, we don't need to approve it. We trust that, you know, your content has been great and it will continue to be great even if you're working with us. And that trust puts me in such a creative mindset. And like, oh my God, you know, I'm going to do more for you. I'm going to go above and beyond for you. Instead of those brands that are literally controlling your every second of every video. And I've also enjoyed working with brands that would say, like, we'll just get 30 seconds of your video. Whatever else you do, that's you. Right? And I've really felt the freeing of my stress, of my worry about, you know, if I'm going to lose the passion from people that I work with now. And I think I guess you feel the same, but, like, we're in a place now, which we're so lucky, we're going to be able to tell whether or not we want to work with a brand. And I think for people that are, you know, getting into the YouTube space or wanting to make this into a job per se, at first you can't really pick and choose because you're earning, right? Because you have to earn, you have to put food on the table. But after a while, you're really going to be able to say, okay, like, these are the brands that I trust. These are brands I want to work with.
I basically, everything you just said, I built my business model around that.
Yes.
So I come from a business background, right? So yes. I understand opportunity. I understand cost. I understand risk for corporate companies. And so when we started doing integrated brand content, there was so much risk involved for the brand.
Yeah.
Because they were just trusting this new guy on a new platform. They had no idea what they were doing. I barely knew what I was doing. And so I was like, okay, how can I make this brand feel more comfortable that I know what I'm doing? Right.
Yes.
So you start treating yourself as a business. So you know your data, you know your analytics, you know your insights by heart. You can prove with numbers that you've done this before and then you can do it again for them.
Which so is unlike commercials, right? Like, correct. You don't know how many people are watching that.
Correct. And so that's that first layer, that first base layer is knowing what you're capable of online. And then the second layer, I was like, okay, so I have these great ideas. I have this way of presenting it. Now I need to be able to justify the cost that the brand is going to pay me,
yes.
Right? So before it would be me, then we would look for a third party production company and they would produce it. That production company and myself, if the company had chosen the production company, if we didn't see eye to eye, it'd be terrible. So that's why I built my own production company.
Because yes.
Then now I can come to the brand and say, okay, this is the concept and 100% I can guarantee you at this price that I can do something of this quality.
Yeah,
and that gave the brands, again, a second level of comfort. So everything that I've always done in terms of scaling the business mm-hmm. was to make sure that brands felt like we were taking their hands and we were basically taking them through the process and said, hey, we've done this. And exactly what you said, if the brands were cool, we would do so much more than we actually set out to do.
Exactly.
And the brands absolutely loved it. And then as we kind of grew into the business, we took it a step further. We realized one of the biggest issues with integrated campaigns was that the brands, you had young people at mid-level management that were pitching influencers and branded online content to their marketing managing bosses who were 50, who are then saying, okay, we need to get this approved by a 60-year-old. Now, I'm not ageist or anything.
I know what you mean.
But because
the generation gap.
Correct. And because of that generation gap, it means there was an education gap in terms of what's
Yes.
actually possible, right? Are you
Yes.
going to spend 6 million pesos to put a TV ad on a cable network, or are you going to spend 150,000 pesos to put it online?
Exactly.
And again, those two things are very important. Those two things still have a place, but it really depends on what your objectives are. So what we started doing was road shows. So I would randomly call up brands and say, "Hey, I have a pitch deck. Do you have 15 minutes? I just want to explain to you what we're doing online, the opportunities
Wow.
that we see, and how we see this being a big thing moving on." And so during this time, I actually very would rarely talk about myself. I would talk about the space, about influencer marketing, about online content marketing. I would show them personal insights from what we were doing, showing them how we can justify costs. And at the end, I'd say, "Hey, this is what we do. If you're interested." So basically like a seminar. If you're interested,
Exactly.
let us know.
Yeah.
And that changed everything. And then all of a sudden, you had some old school brands that didn't understand it that now appreciated the fact that, oh, this guy knows what he's talking about. And then they would send us, sometimes it would pan out. Sometimes it would just develop that relationship. And then sometimes I get random texts on Viber and WhatsApp. "Hey, everyone, what do you think about this idea or this idea?" And so you become a bouncing ball in this
Exactly.
creative space. And that's so important.
And little did all of us upcoming creators know that Erwan's 15-minute calls was the one that paved the way for all of these brand opportunities that are happening now on the platform. But no, really, like I feel like there has been such a major shift, especially with this pandemic, from TV, traditional media, to now online. And I really love that brands are being able to see the importance and the respect that they should have for content creators, because I feel like starting out it was kind of a, oh, you just make online content or you just make a YouTube video. But it's like, dude, like the amount of work it takes, as you said, you'd either pay 6 million pesos for a whole production company, for getting a set, for getting an editor, director, everything, or you pay one person. Well, in my case, right, you pay one person to be the talent, to be the producer, to be the platform. And the cost is like, a fraction of the price. And I love how brands are able to see that now. And the way in which they advertise is more malleable, because before it wasn't very malleable, and that's what you said, like, brands would ask you to literally have a script. And I'm like, my followers are not gonna buy that. Like, like I just have to be open with them and say, I want to give you a good name, right? I want to make you look good.
For me and some of the kind of like the old guard that started 10 years ago, a decade ago, it was all about kind of like normalizing our place in digital marketing. And I remember I
Yes.
was at a talk and someone in the audience asked me, "Hey, everyone, what would you advise a brand that is currently putting 100% of their marketing budget in influencer marketing?" And I didn't even think about it. I have word vomit at times. And so he asked this question in front of like close to maybe 300, 400 people. And I said, "Oh, I think that brand's being really stupid." And the whole audience went quiet because this was it was a talk about influencer marketing. And I said, "No,
Yeah.
look, let's be very clear here. Influencer marketing is a subset of social media marketing, and social media marketing is a subset of digital marketing, and digital marketing is a subset of marketing. And so
Yes.
you need, as a brand, to understand that you need to dedicate certain percentages of your marketing budget to these different kind of categories and verticals." And that's why I told a brand, "If you were to pay me all your marketing budget to do a campaign for you, and your product success is sink or swim on my shoulders, I'd tell you no, I'm
Whoa.
not going to take
Yeah,
that."
of course. That's so much
And
pressure.
so I still think that's really important. And so, but what we try to work hard on is to make sure that we are part of that conversation. We are part of that vertical.
We have that percentage.
Exactly. And each time I talk to a client, I say, "What, let me know what else you're doing online. I don't want to just know what I'm doing. I want to know what your overall 360 marketing campaign is, because then I can
Yes.
better tailor make what I'm making so that hopefully it looks more holistic. But it also helps out your other campaigns that you're doing on the side."
What are some like assumptions that people have about the online space and working as, a content creator that you want to debunk?
Number one would be the word vlog. I have nothing against vloggers. I think we are today reaping the benefits of what the vloggers brought onto the platform, that personality, that virality, which we didn't really have before. The reason why celebrities are joining the platform now is because the vlogging format is a gateway format. It's the probably the one that you could do on the fly the most. But I think it's a misconception to think that anyone who creates online content is a vlogger. When we shoot our videos, we're like three. Well, you saw the sets and everything. That was a big
Huge,
set.
huge
But
set.
even our smaller ones, it's usually an audio guy, it's two cameramen, it's two camera systems, it's SSDs, it's producers, it's editors. So you start skirting that line between TV production and online production. I still feel like we do things smaller scale, obviously. But I think that's the number one misconception. And then the other misconception is that negative word that vlogging has now gotten.
Why do you think?
It's because I think at one point, vlogging was about documenting your life. And all the early vloggers, you would walk around Manila and you would see them. They would have the camera 24/7 up. And I remember even some of my friends, I would sit down to have a proper
Conversation.
conversation, and the camera would come out. And I'd be like, hey, I don't mind, but there's a time and place. Like, I'm not someone that wants to, my whole life doesn't have to be online because it's important to keep that separate. And so I think that's where that negative connotation is, that need to kind of cover and shoot your whole life. And I understand that in the
It gets
beginning,
invasive at
but it
times.
gets very
It's not
invasive.
sustainable.
Viewers get annoyed at one point. And so how did that change? When did I start seeing that change? Is when people started doing challenges. Okay, so challenges, I've personally haven't done a lot, but what challenges were, basically what challenges became, challenges without knowing it, people were doing formats. Like when you do a TV, you're following a structure, right? And a challenge is basically a structure. So once I started seeing challenges online, then I start understanding, okay, these people now get that it's not about showing my daily life. It's formatting it around something. There's a purpose and there's a goal to this potential video. And so now I think when you speak about vloggers, a lot of them are actually very meticulous in how they plan, how they edit, how they VO, right? So a lot of the times people think, and this is, remember when we talked about your daily vlog and stuff like that.
Yeah, exactly. Hey, which
You
I
take
did, by the
I
way.
know, I know. Great job. Great job. You did it one day later than I expected it, though. But basically, people think you shoot a camera. You The easiest way to vlog is on and off, basically exactly when you want it. And you can be as tight as you want. But at the end of the day, you sit down, you upload it onto your timeline, and you're like, oh my God, this is the most boring video ever. So you need to start moving parts around. You need to start putting sound beds and voiceovers and stuff like that. And that's the part people don't see.
The
So
editing chair.
if you don't put structure, your post-production becomes hell. If you put structure, your pre-production becomes hell. It's always going to be hell at one point or another, and it's always going to be really stressful because it's stressful to basically give birth to an idea and on paper decide this is good.
Yes, it might be hell, but it's like kind of a fun hell.
You enjoy it. Yeah, no, it's part of it. It's like I always tell people, there's beauty in struggle. Like there's I hate this whole chasing a state of happiness stuff. Like happiness, and I did a voiceover. This is why it is so fresh. I did a voiceover just literally an hour ago, where I kind of speak about happiness, and what annoys me with happiness is people feel like they need to be happy all the time. I'm like, if you were happy all the time, and let's say you become used to happiness, so you need to do things that make you happier and
And that
happier and
doesn't, it's not
happier.
anymore happy because, like after a while it gets laosna and it's not anymore
Correct.
happiness. And I think happiness is circumstantial. And the problem with that is that you're never the only one in charge of your circumstance. And so if happiness is circumstantial, you're actually telling the world, I'm allowing you to dictate the way that I feel. And that is never going to be, that's never good.
Exactly. Exactly. And to feel true happiness, you need to go through moments of sadness and struggle. It's just all understanding you know, it's understanding the point of it. And once you understand the point of it, once you've accepted that there will be ups and downs, you'll be okay. But you'll always be more okay if you have a purpose.
Yes.
If you have a North Star.
Yes.
And that's how I see content, right?
Yes.
You struggle, but you're enjoying that struggle because you know you're working towards something.
Yes, exactly.
And then when you put that, when you finally press post on that video, and people don't understand also that it's just, it's always very scary to press post on a video and upload. You as a content creator, and especially I probably, like from the little we've interacted, I know 100% this is you. Once you've uploaded, you're not going to be happy with that video. Like there are things you're going to want to change, but then that motivates you to do better on the next one.
In the way that I vlog, in the way that I do things, it's because I'm very much a meticulous person. Like you mentioned, I feel like you were talking about me there a while ago. But if you don't have a purpose and you make a video and you post it, you are giving people, the world, too much power to determine whether or not you succeeded. You know what I mean? Like, because the views are going to tell you, the comments are going to tell you whether you succeeded. But me personally, what I realized is in order for me to not be so caught up with the numbers and what people have to say about my content, I have to agree within myself, what is the purpose of this video? As long as that is achieved, everything else is secondary. The number of views, what people have to say, their comments, their suggestions, whatever. Yes, those are important, but those are not the ones that are going to determine whether or not a video I did or content I do is successful. I really create a structure, and I have at the top of every outline that I make, this is what we're doing. This is the goal. This is the purpose. And then from there, I create an outline. And that's not just a vlog. You know what I mean?
Correct. Yeah. And it's understanding the sense of scale. And I think this brings us back also to Steffi's question in the beginning, what you're talking about in terms of views. Way back when we hit 100,000 subscribers in YouTube before, oh my God, it was like
huge,
a party. It was huge, right? If you had 20,000, 30,000 views on a video, and I'm talking about this is when we started. So the sense of scale was 20,000 was a lot. Now I'll have a video with like 50,000 and I'll have comments that say, oh, your views are so low and everything, which honestly, I don't
really
care.
People really say that?
They do, yeah. But the reason why is because they're comparing you to other people who have millions of views. And I'm not going to lie and say I didn't wish every video I made had that many views.
Yeah, of course.
But I don't really care about it. And I think that's the most important part, because I posted a video for how to make a raisin focaccia yesterday and has like 50.
I watched it.
Oh
my God, the crunch.
So good, right? And people would probably think, okay, that's, you know, it's just 15,000 views. It's not a lot compared to 2 million views. But you always have to take it back to your sense of scale. If tomorrow 15,000 people in their house makes focaccia, that is a lot of focaccia.
A lot of influence, right? Too. Hey.
Exactly. Another one is, when people used to write cookbooks, which is kind of more of where I am, my thread, they would sell, one copy would sell 10, 20,000 copies, and it would be considered a bestseller.
Oh.
But you're like, okay, but 15,000 views on a video is not enough. You know what I mean?
Yes.
So you really have to bring it back to your sense of scale. And that comes from personal perspective. And if you were talking to me 10 years from now, I'd be a very different person. But mm-hmm. because I'm a bit more mature now.
Yeah.
I understand that perspective, and I understand that it's so important to keep, or else you go crazy.
Oh,
once
yeah.
you get caught up in the views, you're never going to be the best. First of all, we're not the best at what we do.
We'll never be the best. There's always going to
exactly.
be someone.
If you chase that, you're never going to be happy, and it's going to be so exactly. sad. And that's why a lot of YouTubers burn out, is because once they see their views start dipping, they take that as a sign that they should quit.
And honestly, I was in that place because we talked about this briefly when we saw each other, but you know, because of the pandemic, because of ABS-CBN shutdown, you know, so many of the traditional you know, entertainers moved to the YouTube space. And so suddenly it was a very saturated platform, which is not bad. I'm glad that we have more people. I'm glad that there are more people, you know, drawing viewers to the platform. But it also definitely shifted things in a way that was very dynamic, like a fast change, you know, Like, suddenly, it's just, you know, a few cars, now it's traffic. And I'm like, oh my gosh, you know. And of course, there was a very prominent, and the thing is, I already deleted YouTube Studio from my phone, but it literally tells you, ah, this video is not doing as well as your.
Yeah, I'm like, it's the worst.
Don't tell me. So I'm very well aware of the fact that my views are not as popping as they used to be. But as we talked about, right, purpose. At the end of the day, even my brother Donnie started his YouTube channel, I don't know, maybe last year. Saw it's something that he's really putting so much of his time into. It's like, oh, just a side thing. I want to make a YouTube video. But he has more subscribers than me already. And I've been doing it far longer than he has. But he's my constant North Star that I'm like, quiz, I'm getting stressed out. Like, this is not performing as well. And he's like, wait, keep quiet. Like, stop. First of all, it's not about the number, but it's about like the quality of the people that are watching you. Like, what are they saying? What are they saying about your video? Like, are they saying, you're so cute, or, oh, I want to be you, how to be you? Or are they saying, this is absolutely changing my life? Or after I watched this, I decided to go to this college and I never thought I'd decide. You know what I mean? So I have to consistently, as you said, go back to that. What is my North Star? What is the thing that's, why did I start this out in the first place? Or else, if not, like you said, burnout, gonna quit the platform, not gonna do it anymore. So perspective is so important if you want to find a place on the space.
But I think it's also key, like what you said a while ago, in terms of you want to try to find something sustainable.
Of course.
So that you could still do your passion, but still work and earn on the side, which are two very important things. And I think for any YouTubers or influencers or even, you know, yourself, if the way I've always looked at it is throughout all this, through all this experience, you've developed a certain set of skills.
Mm-hmm.
And these are the skills that you can monetize. Like, don't think about the style of videos or the format of videos or what you're really passionate about making. Think about what's the base skill that you developed there, right?
Yeah.
So, and that skill set from time immemorial, you know, blacksmiths and freaking, I don't know, horse groomers. Those are skill sets, and people made money from those skill sets.
Exactly.
And so you should be earning from your skill set.
Yeah.
So everyone needs to look deep down and say, what am I actually really good at? And I'm better than most people at.
Yeah.
And then I can charge for that. And that's when you can start separating what you do for passion and what you do for work.
For those who didn't know, I just wanted to say, yes, I did actually. I was featured in Erwan's channel, Feature. And we did a cooking show with Andre Lagdaveo. So if you would like to check that out, please do. I'll leave the link down below. But I wanted to ask you, when did you decide for your one-man show channel to finally become a team? Even before you named it Feature. You know, when did you say, like, this is time to evolve?
What people probably don't understand online is that volume and consistency are things that are required from the platforms. So I don't know how algorithms work, but I do know that they reward consistency.
Yes.
So the more you not the more you post, but if you post a certain amount
at per a month, specific time.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. There's more likelihood that your videos will be watched and recommended to people.
And it becomes a habit. It becomes a habit also for your viewers.
Correct. Yeah, it becomes a habit. And what you don't realize is if you're pushing out 2 videos a year, it's like 150 videos a year. And and especially when, like me before, it was mostly recipes. So let's say you're developing 150 to 200 recipes a year, because some videos have like 4 recipes in them. Most people, when they make cookbooks, it's usually 100 recipes in a book that they publish every 4 or 5 years.
Wow.
So that volume, that requirement for
the
volume
turnover.
Is very tiring. The turnover. And me personally, as I was building a company and as I was starting to sell my skill set and starting to make my money from my skill set, which was not Erwan the host, but Erwan the director,
yeah.
Erwan the executive producer,
mm-hmm.
Erwan the creative for commercials and ads. I started getting torn in between 2 places of if I need to create and host every piece of content that we put out, the team that I've built one don't get to do more, and the team that we have want to do more.
Yeah.
And it's not fair to them.
Yeah. Because it always has to be limiting, you. Yeah.
Correct. I'm limiting everyone. But it was also a business. It was a business decision, because if I were in fact to open it up to other people, we could do twice to three times more volume than we're currently doing.
Yeah.
And then the third clencher for me was, well, not the pandemic played a huge part, even though this had been the plan for a long time already. Like in 2018, I started thinking about changing. There was no name yet.
Mm-hmm.
And the pandemic, because I was stuck at home, because I was stuck in Australia.
Yeah.
Specifically with a team here in the Philippines, I was like, we need to figure something out here, because I can't be the one shooting all my own videos.
Oh yeah, home. You're completely alone.
So, yeah, so I was doing that. I was alone. I had to buy new gear for it and everything, and it would just take me. It take me 12 hours to shoot one cooking video, and we had gotten to a point where we were so efficient we could shoot 10 videos a day when I'm with my team in the Philippines for recipes.
Mm-hmm.
And so, yeah, so that played a huge role in kind of, like, accelerating that path we were on. And it was also kind of like a decision born out of frustration. So one of the reasons why I started creating content online was two real reasons.
Yeah.
One, because I had something to share, and that was my weight loss story.
Mm-hmm.
And I wanted to help people get fit.
Yeah.
And then the second one was I remember auditioning for a cooking show. I loved Bourdain from the get-go, but I also loved Jamie Oliver and Gordon Ramsay, yes. And I loved cooking shows.
Yeah,
and
I was like, all right, them.
You know, there's a call for a cooking show, I'm going to audition, and I didn't get it. And so when I didn't get it, I was like, you know what?
I don't need you.
This isn't so hard. I can do this by myself. That was crazy. No, it was really hard, but yeah, that's what I thought. And so when we were starting doing our content and I started producing all my own videos, and I had finally reached that goal, and I was like, what's the next goal? And I realized from hosting and producing content, what I loved the most was actually the producing of content.
Mm.
Was just being able to read an article or write an article and say, this would make a beautiful video. Yes. Let's make it happen. But how do you do that? How do you get funding for that? If you have nowhere to put it, if you have nowhere to publish it, then I need to jump hoops again with the, you know, the big networks. And it's me
so
pitching,
hard.
let's say I would pitch a documentary to Netflix. I could do that for 10 years and still not get in there.
Yeah,
right?
It's so hard.
So I decided, okay, I want to build a platform that's agnostic enough that we can flex all our creative muscles. We can increase our volume for potential branded content. But we could also do more of the stuff that we love doing without getting brands involved and without me having to be the host.
Exactly.
And so, yeah, that's when we made the switch to feature. For the longest time, it was actually supposed to be called the Fat Kid Inside Studio.
Yeah, I thought that was going to be that, something like that.
I thought, too. And then literally 3 days before making the announcement, I remember sitting down and I said, the only reason I want to call this the Fat Kid Inside Studios is because of ego.
Wow.
That's the only reason I want to put it there. And I realize I'm like, you need to let go of that ego because you want to remove your name from
that's
the platform.
That's so true.
Yeah. Why do you want to put a brand that's so associated to you as the name of that platform?
Wow.
And I was like, and in my head, I was justifying it. I was like, oh, it's because people can find it, tags and search, and people know it to be me. And I was like, that's the whole point.
Yeah.
It's not like this is like, you know, that angel and devil
yeah,
moment.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And then I sat down and I was like, everyone stop being egoistical and just change the name. And then I started thinking, and I'm like, what's the whole point of this platform? I'm like, I just want to be able to feature other people.
That's so good.
And then I was like, okay, feature, that sounds good. And then we started playing around with the letters and everything, and then we made it happen.
I love it. And for those that don't know, Erwan actually started on YouTube like also making like documentaries, like travel videos. You were making travel videos like what, 10 years ago you mentioned?
Yeah.
But the medium in which, like, I watch documentaries, for example, YouTube, Netflix, those weren't things back then. How did you, like, get into that idea, like, oh, I want to video this, or I want to make, like, travel documentaries? Like,
I've always been a huge believer in justifying your art and doing and proving that you can do something by actually doing it instead of just talking about it.
Yes.
And I knew travel formats were going to be a big thing and brands would start looking at it. And I just want an excuse to travel too, but to be able to justify it as work. And so I started doing travel content, but if you look at all my travel videos, none of them were actual vlogs. I brought a team. I was like, for me to be able to take myself seriously, I need to pay someone, some videographers to be with me.
That's
I need
good.
To
spend the accountability is important also.
That accountability is so key. And so when we were there, it was fun, but at the back of our minds, we're like, we're here to create a great travel show and a travel video. And that's how the series Overnight took over.
And it makes both of your passions, right?
Correct. And I was working a corporate job. That's why it was called. That's why it was called Overnight, because I literally had from Friday to Sunday to go to a country, shoot, and then come back and be in the office on Monday. And that's why we started.
A self-sufficiency.
Correct. And that was basically me grinding 7 days a week, right? And even more. And then after I shot the first few ones, I said, hey, these are actually good. Like, and I very rarely say that about my videos, but yeah. The Overnight series, I watched and I was like, it's actually useful, which I loved. It wasn't about me partying and having fun. It was about you have X amount of hours to spend in the city. This video tells you everything from how to get from the airport to the city in the fastest way, where to stay, where to party, where to eat, and where to meet locals. And what to do culturally.
Love it.
And so I was like, this is actually really useful. So I sent drafts to PAL, to Cebu Pacific. I did that, hey, can I speak to your marketing manager type of thing. And then I cold pitched it to Cebu Pacific and they loved the idea and they picked up the first two seasons of it.
Amazing. And do you ever think of wanting to do that again, revamp it?
I miss it so much. Our travel focus shifted a little bit in the later years because I wanted, in the back of my mind, was like, okay, why am I going out of the country when me as a Filipino still has so much to discover? And I was always talking about local cuisine and all that. I'm like, okay, you need to walk the talk. And if someone says whether or not you really know the Philippines, you better know the Philippines. Yes. And I mean going to parts that no one goes to. And I always get in trouble for people telling me I don't speak Tagalog and everything. And I'm just like, what's the measure of a Filipino? Is it a handle of the language or is it a deep cultural connection with a country?
Yes, exactly.
And so I was like, you know what? I'm going to ignore that and I'm just going to go after that deep cultural connection. And so that's why we started doing a lot of travel videos locally because there was so much to bring out.
Yes.
And it wasn't blind. Like, it was also because I knew, you know, the Philippines... Maybe if I can contribute to the Philippines tourism receipts getting bigger by attracting more visitors and stuff like that, then, you know, that'd make me really feel good that I'm contributing to local society. And so that's why for three years, we did a lot of local travel.
Yeah, but I mean, I'm sure it was still like a new experience, even if it was within the Philippines. And like me personally, when I was studying in Australia, I realized how false the misconceptions people had were of the Philippines. They were like, so do you guys have like cities there? And do you guys like I was telling my friend that like, oh yeah, so I live in this village. And their idea of a village is like completely different. And I was like, I can't believe this is your perception of the Philippines. Like my hometown, which I know is like so diverse, so amazing. So I made one video on my channel about the Philippines where I brought my friends from Australia here. And I was like, gosh, I've been looking far and wide, right? Like this country to want to travel. But there's actually so much to uncover here that like, you know, so like that became kind of a purpose in the back of my head. You know, another one where just like, I have a part to play as a Filipino, you know, to be able to debunk what the world thinks we are really like and the beauty that we have to show. So
I think it's that. Also showcasing that, you know, the Philippines is an interesting country in a sense that there's so many islands and the way information flows is it's a very interesting culture to be part of, and it's like a diaspora almost.
Exactly.
And so one of the things for me that was important was to make sure that Filipinos know their country, you know, more. They discover more of their cultures. For, you know, we all, for the longest time, focused on Luzon. And I remember I was having a chat with my friends, because our content was always to fly to a place to shoot travel content and fly back. And then we were talking with a friend, and I remember he was saying, he's like, "Aaron, what are you going to do, like, road trip Mindanao?" And then the next day I was like, "Yeah, okay, that's what I'm going to do." And then so I started sending pitch decks to companies like Hertz rental cars, to different types of companies, to see if they'd sponsor road trip content in the Philippines. And then they said, "But Aaron, is the point of you, is it to promote these as tourism hotspots, or that people should do this kind of tourism?" I said, no, it's not about that. It's just about showcasing what we have and how great the country is.
Yeah.
And for me, the beauty of the country isn't in Manila or Cebu City or like that. It's out there in the small villages, in the small provincial towns and cities. That's where the true beauty of the country lies. And that's what I really wanted to showcase. So if you looked at our travel content over the last 3 years, it was all road trip travel content. And it was just because of that conversation, saying,
"Love that.
The Philippines isn't a country you road trip." And I was just like, "Wait, that's not true. Like, I've been around and I've seen big roads and highways. And Mindanao probably has some of the best highway infrastructure in the Philippines." I was like, "Let's start there." And we would, you know, sleep in hammocks with all, like,
wow.
Imagine us with like black magic gears and stuff like that, black magic cameras, and then sleeping on hammocks on like a roadside shack. And this is like staying in homesteads,
yes,
and like hiking to waterfalls where they make you register, and the name registered before you was in 2016, and here you are hiking in 2019. So it's just magical moments. Amazing. Like that, where you realize, because we come from such a densely populated city,
yes,
but when you go out you realize there's so much to be seen still. So yeah, once things open up, we'll start that again.
Do you think people don't do that because it's inconvenient, or because they just don't know where to go?
Yeah, I'm not gonna lie, it's not comfortable. If you're someone who needs a good restaurant, a hot bath, a comfy bed, then maybe exploring, they call it the cowboy way in the Philippines.
Mm-hmm.
Exploring the cowboy way in the Philippines is definitely not for you.
Mm.
But if you're someone who can live without those comforts and really just want to truly, because once you get away from those comforts, that's when you truly experience like real people.
Yes, that's so true.
Like we spent a couple of days with fishermen in Batanes, and literally we were with them like fishing out on tiny boats at 4 a.m, huge waves, and it was just me and one guy, and
wow,
he barely spoke English and I barely spoke his language, but still we connected in such a magical way over just something so manual like fishing. And he was one of the only fishermen in the Philippines that I had interviewed, because I'd interviewed a bunch of farmers and fishermen at this point, who was just in love with what he was doing. Like, he was so happy to be out in the sea. Like, and it was so, to now it gives me like shivers, because it was so beautiful. I loved it so much. And he did not care who I was. He did not care who I was married to. The guy was growing his own pet chai and carrots in his backyard. He was self-sustaining with fishing his own fish. And when you experience those moments, you think, okay, all the comforts in the world, they don't mean nothing.
Yeah.
Because, and it makes you, it just makes you that much more human once you can start relating to other people and start understanding other people's realities. It makes you appreciate what you have, but it also makes you kind of yearn for the peace that they have, right?
Yeah.
And that's why I love that kind of connection.
That is so amazing.
And that kind of travel.
I miss traveling so much, but that was a very refreshing just image of, like, you know, you look so far, you get so many things to try to, you know, right, as we mentioned earlier, to reach what, euphoria, happiness, or whatever, but all of that actually comes when you scale down, when you look at what's right in front of you, And when you look like to your next door neighbor, instead of going to, I don't know, Europe or something, not only did you do travel vlogs, but you also started doing like food vlogs. And as you mentioned, this was because you wanted to pursue a healthy lifestyle, or you did that and you wanted to share it with people. That's why it's the Fat Kid Inside Studios. So when did you decide, okay, this fat kid outside is gonna become inside instead? You know, because I'm sure that there are a lot of people, you know, listening right now through this pandemic, struggling to get fit, you know, just like me. What was that for you?
My weight loss origin story was way back when there were the diet books that you had access to were like in physical books. They weren't ebooks. Or there were no diet experts online. It was South Beach Diet, it was Atkins, it was all these very high protein diets and stuff like that. And so now it's easy because it's very easy to condense information. But back then you had to I had to read through 10 diet books and then eventually come to a conclusion of what I think healthy eating is by summarizing all that. And so I applied it to myself, and over 6 months I went from being medically obese to just being average.
Wow.
And I was like, this is so easy. Like, this is so easy.
For you, it was just easy for you?
I found it extremely easy in the fact that it's simple. If you're someone with zero discipline and a very low threshold to mental gymnastics and pain, it's not going to be easy, but at the end of the day, it'll still be very simple. Yes, because the information in terms of, like, you don't need to inject yourself and drink chia seeds and do kale smoothies to lose weight and lose fat. We do all those things because it complements a certain lifestyle we want to have. But at the end of the day, if you truly want to lose fat, and not for aesthetic reasons, for, like, health reasons, it's easy because it's all about scaling back everything you're eating. Not just in portion sizes, but in terms of frequency and in terms of the variety of what you're eating. You could eat steamed chicken breasts every day. You could. It'll be very simple. You just don't want to.
Yeah.
Right? And exactly. So you look for variety. You look for recipes in these things. And so when I started the Fat Kid Inside, that's what I want. That's the message I wanted to give to people, that it's actually really simple. You just need to want it. And that was so key. So I really, and a lot of people think that the whole Fat Kid Inside name actually came from aesthetic purposes or reasons, but it didn't. It came from a deep rooted insecurity that the fat kid will always be inside of me. And so it was kind of like a mental joke to myself. I was like, let's just call it the Fat Kid Inside, because I want to put my insecurity out there.
Wow.
I want to live with it because I know it will always be a part of me. And yeah, so for me, it's always been a huge, because there's a lot of information out there on health.
So much
fitness.
Information. Yeah.
It's too much. It's too much. And I think the consensus is that every physical body is genetically the same. So if something works for someone, it'll work for you. And that's the biggest bull ever.
100%.
So over the last year when I was in lockdown in Melbourne, everything, and I very openly talk about this, I gained close to 8 kilos. You can ask my wife, you can ask my sister, my brother-in-law, absolutely anyone I live with. I work out daily, no miss, almost, if not 6 days a week, 7 days a week.
Wow.
I eat extremely healthy, very lean proteins, very low carb, lots of vegetables, small amounts of fruit here and there, no snacking. I drink 2 glasses of wine a week, yet I still gain weight.
Wow.
And so what does that tell you? It just tells you I have a body that's just predispositioned to gain quickly.
Yeah.
And that's why the name of Fat Kid Inside is there, because I know it. Like, I have hypothyroid issues, but that wouldn't be the only cause of weight gain, but it just happens to me. So I have to be very careful.
Yeah.
And that's why I always tell people, I've said, hey, if someone's telling you a solution to fat loss, they just want your money. That's all they want. Like, there's no one solution for something. And you, if you're trying to get fit now, it's going to be a very different story from you in 15 years if you're trying to get fit.
Yes.
The struggle's going to be very different.
Because the seasons. Yeah, definitely. The seasons. And you know, like, Because when I moved to Australia to study, it was the first time I was living abroad by myself. And suddenly, the things that I didn't have to make time for, I had to make time for, such as my laundry, cleaning my room, cooking, like walking to school. These are things I never had to make time for. And so because of all of that, I didn't have the time. Well, I guess I did if I really wanted to, but it wasn't a priority for me to go outside and run, because I was already doing a lot of manual labor in my mind, you know? And so I did gain a few pounds, and I saw it. Like, I really saw it, and my family saw it as well. But it's like, and I, for a while, I was like, oh my God, like, this is so not me, you know? Like, and as you say, you know, the fat kid inside is kind of like an insecurity of yours. It has to deal with like self-image, right? Like, I always had that thing in my head that like, I'm always going to be this super fit, super lean person, because that's just who I've always been. But as humans, we're not stagnant, right? We constantly shift, we constantly change, and we don't know the time and the place for all of those changes. And me, because my priorities were not getting thin or not getting fit or whatever, I gained a few pounds. And like, that really messed up my self-image, because I was like, oh my God, like, this is not me. But then I look back and I'm like, wait a minute, like, how did I gain that weight, right? Well, I gained a lot of that weight because I was doing a lot of things that I never did before. I was independent, right? And I was living alone with myself, probably dealing with a lot of stress that I've never had to deal with before. Living without my family, you know, with living without that support. I was also celebrating a lot with new friends of mine, going to parties and meeting people. And so when I look back, yeah, maybe I gained a few pounds, right? But wow, the season that happened, like, trumps how I looked, right? And I think that's something that like, people have to, I have to like get rid of in my head, that like, the way you look is more important than the experience that you go through or the season that you're, you know what I mean? That's why, like, when I went home, and I mean, I'm sure you know this, in the Philippines, like, the first thing they say is, oh, tumaba ka.
Yeah. I hate that.
I hate it so much. And I'm like, there are so many other things that I have grown in, that I've developed in, that I have to share, other than the way that I look. And it's just like, oh. But at the end of the day, I guess, like you mentioned, it's not one size fits all, right? And it's simple, because you just have to be honest with yourself about how you genuinely 100%. Feel. And after I went through a pretty bad like mental battle with how I looked and, you know, like identity issues and stuff like that, I realized that, hey, wait a minute, what I actually want is not to look thin, right? Or that's not sustainable, or that's not going to determine who I am, but I want to be fit, I want to be healthy, I want to be strong. And that's kind of that's the main push.
I think it's more about feeling good.
Yes.
And once your body has gone through so many changes, and I've yo-yoed up and down my whole life, right?
I think it's normal.
Yeah, and, you know, the difference with me is I started really big from childhood all the way to, like, I was obese until I was 21.
Mm-hmm.
And then I was regular, average. And then in 2019, I'd gone down to 8% body fat. So I was, like, super dry and ripped. But I never posted it. You know why I never posted shirtless pictures or anything? But very rarely.
Why?
Because I still felt like I wasn't fit enough.
Wow.
But then I look at pictures now and I'm like, oh my God, I was ripped. I should have posted these. No, but really, but I felt
there's always good. TBT.
Yeah, exactly. That's true. I wasn't feeling like gaunt or skinny or anything like that. I felt good. I felt really fit. And I think when you say you want to be strong, like, there was a huge switch, which I think is that I loved, that it was. It was used to be skinny is sexy, and now is strong is sexy. But yeah. I still feel like we need to evolve from that.
Yeah.
I still feel like we need to evolve from it. Really, it really does come down to personal feeling. Because unless you've gained 30, 40 kilos, then honestly, the people around you don't care.
Yeah, they don't.
Like, as long as you don't, you're not like medically unhealthy. As long as your weight gain isn't affecting the way you live life and what you can do physically and mentally, then I think the only person that really cares about what you look like is you. That's it. And it's really a mental thing. And that's why for me now, it's not necessarily what I look like. It's really what I feel like. And now that I'm like, maybe I've lost some weight already, but I'm like still 7 kilos, I feel heavy. Mm-hmm. Like when I go running, when I run, I used to be able to run 21K in an hour 40 just for fun, right? I could do a 10K run in 50 minutes as a warm up. Like,
oh my God.
That was my warm up. Now, if you told me to do that, no, it's not going to happen. I'm going to really struggle. And that for me is what sucks. Like, I wish I could still perform at that level. And so it really comes to me, like, I feel a little heavier than what mm-hmm. I'm used to, but mm-hmm. I'm not killing myself for it.
Exactly.
I'm still living life, which I think is really important.
Yes. It's you have to know what the motivation is behind it, or else you're just going to get lost. I personally feel like in order to make lifestyle like this sustainable, you have to have, for yourself, limitations and kind of rules that you put in place. For me, for example, it's like, I try to do like one sweet meal a day because I love sweets. Like I love sugar. So one sweet meal. And I also do like IF, which has been like life changing for me. And I also like try my best to work out in the morning. Like it's that concept of you eat the frog. Have you ever heard
exactly.
of that?
Yeah.
Because you're never gonna, you have to just do the thing that you hate the most or the thing that's gonna take the most effort first, or else you won't get it done. That's what I've realized, you know, going through the process. That's me. But that only applies to me sometimes. But like, what is that for you?
That structure is so important. So my alarm goes off at 5 a.m. every morning. And I'm up at 5, yep. Because I have a baby, so she's going to be up at 7:30.
True, true.
So I'm up at 5, and I get that all done right from the get-go. That's like the number one thing I do. The other limitation that I said is I can only drink alcohol on weekends. So mm-hmm. I'm not a heavy drinker. I've never been a heavy drinker.
Yeah, me also.
But I enjoy wine. So I'll only, and it's, especially when you work from home, a lot of the times, for me to be able to feel like it's the weekend, like after we talk today, I'm going to have a glass of red wine. And it's just going to feel like, it's Friday.
Oh,
right?
I love that. Yeah.
And I like that ritual. You know, French people, especially in France, when it comes to wine is not necessarily about you drinking a whole bottle. It's the ritual of wine.
Yes, that's my dad. Yeah.
Yeah, and I love that. And so that's one of, I guess you could say that's a limitation, but in the same time, it's something I allow myself to do.
Leeway. That's important.
There's always leeway. And it's always important you understand when people talk about fat loss and weight loss online is they very rarely speak of the mind.
Yeah.
And the mental aspect of weight loss is the key.
That is it.
Without it, voila, you're done.
Voila, no.
You can work out every day, but if you're not focused on that workout, it's going to be a terrible workout.
Yes.
You can eat healthy every day, but then if you break emotionally on the weekend and eat 2 tubs of ice cream, your whole week is
because
gone.
Because stress is one of the biggest reasons for fat gain.
It's stress, it's happiness, it's sleep. Mm-hmm. And all that's mental, and it's just working on yourself. And so for that to work, you also need to be kind to yourself. You need to be very strict, but you also need to know, you know what? Me eating this ice cream cone today does more good than it does bad. Because mentally, I just need it a little bit.
Yeah.
And then tomorrow, we'll start again. Cool. Yeah. No stress, right? Once you start stressing about weight loss, you're not going to lose weight. Simple as that, yeah.
Amazing. I love that. Yes, the mental aspect is so important. Okay, well, you have a baby. So you'd have to cook for her, but so let's summarize for our listeners. I hope that you guys have enjoyed this episode so far, but if you guys didn't catch on, or Juan, if you didn't catch on, here's an insight into my hypothetical outline of today. So we talked about you being a foodie and a traveler, talked about you being in film and the content space, and now let's close off your what's next for you is a father. Like, maybe, like, now that you are a dad and everything, how has it changed your perspective on, like, this is a big goal, okay, that everybody has been, like, this is your first child. Maybe you could just leave us with a bit of an encouragement. As a new dad, how can you, let's say all of the Cuentos with Hannah listeners are your children. How would you encourage them to, you know, reach success, or when they're struggling to achieve their goals, or when they can't see the point of all of this? What would you like to say?
I think at this point in time, what's really important is to be patient. I think patience is a value that we're all losing a grip on, simply because we're so used to instant gratification on social media, online, with information. That's why fake news happens, because people are not patient enough to read the article. And I think that's such an important value that our parents had a lot, because they needed to be patient. And I think being a father, that's given me that perspective, that things take time, but it's important. It's not, but things take time for a purpose. There's a purpose for things to take time. And like when I see my daughter, and they say, you know, kids are so magical because every day it's something different. And that's what being a father or parent teaches you, is that every day can bring something different. You need to be open to it. And if you're thinking about 150 things a day, if you're freaking out about everything, if you're anxious about not being perfect, about not being unique, and about not being successful at 25, you will be closing your mind to every single opportunity and every single learning out there. And for you to be able to foster and grow and connect with a community, you need to be open. And your mind can't be flooded with insecurities, with expectations for yourself. You really need to be open to the world, and you need to learn from the world and be a student of the world. The day you think you know everything, you've lost. You always, the thing I always say is, I want to be able to look back from today, from this year, look back last year and say, that guy, Erwan, in 2020 was an idiot. And because you need that personal growth, you need that personal growth. I think that's what I want everyone to kind of realize. Like, if you want to make something happen, the last thing you should be doing is tweeting about it online. Get offline and do something about it. That's so key. Like, connect with people, right? Learn about people.
Amazing! Oh my gosh, I'm so inspired. Thank you so much for, again, guesting in today's podcast. And also, guys, please do check out Feature for all of the content that we talked about today. And I'll see you guys in the next podcast. Bye!
Thanks for listening, guys.